where you're from, what's your name? Wanna go to my game, got the keys to my dad's old truck. Turn the radio on to remember the song. We held hands and there it was, love.
The Red, White, and Blue Tour coming to Tallahassee's Mount Vernon Performing Arts Center Saturday night. Jeff Bates joins us on the line. He'll be on the stage with Ronnie McDowell, Paulette Carlson, and company for a big show, 7 o'clock at the theater this weekend. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Talk about this tour. You get to get up there and perform with a couple of legends yourself. You've had some success in this business. I know it's a fun night that everybody will get to see.
It is a lot of fun. You know, I remember when Paulette Carlson came out with Highway 101 back in the late 80s. I hadn't even made it to Nashville yet. And loved what she did. And then, of course, over the years, I've made friends with Ronnie McDowell and the promoter of the show. Danny Raspberry has called me to come do several things over time with Ronnie, and I have a huge amount of respect for him. He reminds me of a better version of me, probably a little bit, because I say that because he grew up, Elvis was his hero. Elvis was my hero, too. And I wanted to be Elvis, and my mama wound up telling me when I was real young, said, you can't be Elvis, baby, because there already is one. So Ronnie actually came out with The King Is Gone just about the time that I really needed Elvis to be around, you know. So I really admired what he did and appreciated the fact that he took that and made a career out of that beginning, you know. Just paying his last respects to his hero. My first concert I went and saw was Merle Haggard and George Jones and Conway Twitty when I was 17. And I watched Merle come out and do his thing, and I knew he was singing My Life. I knew it from the first song and was a huge fan already. Same with George Jones. But I'd never paid attention to Conway Twitty. I knew my mama liked him. She loved Conway and Loretta Lynn. She had all their records. But I didn't pay much attention to him until I went and saw that show, and he just walked out in the dark with 30,000 women in a venue, you know, there it was Mississippi Gulf Coast Coliseum, and it was way more women than me, and they were all sitting there quiet as a mouse. You could hear a pin drop. And when Conway Twitty said "Hello, darling," it erupted, and it was. I'd never been to a concert before, and it scared me. And I got up and took off.
Really?
And I mean, I ran up the stairs to get back out of the Coliseum, but then I realized that was supposed to happen, and I saw what, you know, he never said a word the whole show, and they were just screaming and hollering and carrying on, and I said, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't even believe I saw Elvis do that. Just walk out and say, hello, darling. Wow.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting that he had that appeal. What was it that made Conway so popular? Is it that perm he had? What is that voice? I mean, what is
it? I think he could have been bald. Because I'll tell you exactly what it is. I heard this, and it was weird, all right? But we lived in Bunker Hill, Mississippi. And grass grew in the road. In front of the house, two vehicles came through there other than Daddy going and coming to work every week. One was a school bus. The other was the mailman. And one day the mailman pulls into the driveway. Never saw that happen before. What was I, 7, 8 years old? And he got out and he handed my mom a package. She had evidently ordered something. So I'm standing there, you know, never seen anything like that where I come from at that point. And she opens it up, and she says, And I said, what is it, Mama? And she showed me the album cover, and it was Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn. And she said, you know, he ain't much to look at. But he sure does make me feel stuff.
Like, that's kind of Elvis. Elvis did the same thing, right? That's it. He had that appeal.
He did, but guess what? Here's what I've discovered over the years. I can stand on stage no matter what country I'm in, and I've been all over the world. No matter what country I'm in, I say, do Do we have any Elvis Presley fans? Because I do a couple of Elvis songs in my show from time to time. And they scream and holler. And I say, what about Conway Twitty fans? And they go absolutely nuts over Conway Twitty.
Yeah.
No matter what country you're in.
Wow.
And whatever he had, he touched on that thing in relationships that women would. I always say that Conway said what men would love to say and don't know how, and women love to hear.
I believe it. Yeah.
I believe that, and that's the appeal. It's this. What was her? Oh, Holly Gleason. She was my publicist, and I even, she was very eccentric. I'll put it that way. But she said something. She said, if you can sing what people feel, they'll always come see you.
You know what? I was listening to something recently. You bring this up, that it was Wayne Newton, I think, and he was talking about Frank Sinatra. You may have heard this, where some artist came up and he was a very talented artist, and he gives him a tape or whatever, and he says, hey, I want you to listen to this. He said, well, I don't need to listen to it because you are as talented as you can be, but you don't have this that it takes. And it was the emotion, the feeling that gets, you know, what you just said, basically, to be successful.
And that moves me right on to the next point. Because people will ask me, say, how long have you been singing? Well, I've been singing since I was a baby. My mama, her daddy had cancer. It was terminal. And the last time that he was alive, right before he died, she took me to the hospital because he had asked to see me. And I was two years old. And she set me on the bed at his feet. And she held his hands up, again at his request, held his hands up to form the prayer hands, you know, and held his hands there while he prayed, and I sung Jesus Loves Me. Hmm. That's how he died.
Wow.
And that's how long I've been singing.
That says something. You bring up Conway. You know, he's got so many great songs, really. I don't know if you kept up with music, and I know you did. Two of my favorites. I don't know, you, and I know you do some of these songs in the show, I guess, but everybody says Hello, Darling, but I like Happy Birthday, Darling. And I'll give you another one that was done on the pop charts by Bette Midler, The Rose. I just love his version. It's so much better to me than that. But, I mean, those are just a couple of tunes that I like by Conway. He has so many great songs. And another thing I'll add is, what an indoctrination into this business. If you told me, you said Conway Twitty, George Jones, and Merle Haggard in one concert.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't have picked three better ones, could you?
No, not for a country concert. And then, two things. One, my mama sat on the doorstep with me every evening about dusk, dark. We would sit there. She'd fix her a glass of tea, and she'd let me sip it every now and then if I didn't slobber in it. and she would sing old gospel songs that she learned growing up. She was from Bogalusa, Louisiana. She grew up on the banks of the Pearl River in a shack that had a dirt floor. Wow. That was her raising. And her daddy was part-time alcoholic, part-time preacher. When he wouldn't do one, he was doing the other one. And she knew all those old gospel songs, and she would sit there and sing them to me, and she taught them to me. No guitars, no music instruments, no nothing to listen to except her voice. And so if I didn't sing like I'm in it, if I didn't put chill bumps on her arm sometimes, she would pop me behind the head lightly, but she would just pop. Open your mouth and close your eyes and live this song, boy. That's how you sing, and that's how she sang. So you fast forward to the first time I walked in a nightclub. What did I do? I walked in. I lied about my age. I got in. I was 17, and I was just going to try out for a gig on Saturday night, be one extra singer in the band, right? Piano player requested that I come do that. And so I got up there, and I sung a George Jones song. I sung an Elvis song, and I sung a Conway song. and the crowd went crazy. I mean, they like that almost scared me again, you know.
Yeah.
And the club owner ran up to the stage at the end of the last song and met me coming off the stage while everybody was still hollering and clapping. And he says, "How'd you like to come to work for me?" And I said, "Doing what?" He said, "Can you play bass guitar?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "Can you play acoustic guitar?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "The same things. Top four strings are the same. I will give you $50 a night, 6 nights a week." Well, crap. I was working in an oil field at the time, making about $140 a week, and that was for 40 hours.
Yeah.
And he was going to give me $50 cash. Well, I thought I'd hit the big time. And that's where I started.
Wow. Well, that is amazing. You're mentioning another thing that I was going to say they're really good at is basically telling stories in their music and reciting their, you know, and nobody spoke the word better in his songs than Conway, you know, when you bring him up, I think about that.
He literally did. So like when I signed with Warner Brothers Music as a songwriter, the first song that we wrote was a song called Long Slow Kisses. And I simply sat down there and I said, "Guys, I thought of this last night." And I was writing with Ben Hayslip, who's gone on to be an incredible. He's one of the Georgia Peach Pickers. Him and Dallas Davidson and Red Akin has turned Nashville on its ear with their songs they were writing. But he was my first co-writer. He and a guy from Louisiana named Gordon Bradbury. And we wrote Long Slow Kisses. I said, "I had this idea last night." So I sit there and I didn't have music on the verses because the original Long Slow Kisses didn't sing in the verses. And I sat there and I played the music. I had the guitar part worked out and I recited my verse. And when I got to the chorus, I sang, "I'm going to light the bedroom candle, take the phone out of the wall." Did that. And those two guys, they were all in and we wrote it in like an hour. And who knew? And there's, you know, the first thing that my publisher does, he walks in and says, "Well, you're trying to sound like Conway Twitty." And I hadn't even thought about Conway Twitty.
Yeah.
To me, the song is a song about, I'm sorry that I'm not spending the time with you that I need to spend with you, and I'm all wrapped up in work and doing everything else. And to me, that needed to be spoke. Well, nobody was even doing those kind of songs then. Well, that was okay. I stood up for it, and I said, "This is what I'm not trying to sound like Conway. It's just the song." Well, who knew that RCA was going to go crazy over it? And then you fast forward, and I go to jail for my meth addiction and stealing to support it, and I get clean and sober. I meet God in jail, and I made sure I brought him out with me, and I've held on to him ever since because I didn't want to be that guy anymore. And I got out of jail, and I said, "Okay, I'm not looking for a record deal or anything, Lord. Whatever you want me to do. I'm a certified welder. I go back to Mississippi, and I'll weld. I'm a sandblaster. I can go back to Arkansas where I lived for a while and do that. Or I'll stay in jail. Whatever you want, God, instead of what I want." And 1 year later, I get a call from RCA, and they want to meet the guy that's singing on those demos, those songs I wrote. And I just say a little prayer, and I said, "Whatever you want happens, okay with me." And I go in there. I'm very honest about my past, the whole nine yards, and drove home after they thanked me. And, yeah, Renee Bell was the head of A&R at RCA at the time, and she was Conway's head of A&R. She was his A&R lady at MCA for a lot of years. And come to find out, that was why she told me they wanted to meet me, because I reminded her of Conway Twitty. When I sat there and sung those songs, I sung Long Slow Kisses, I sung I Want to Make You Cry, and something else. And she sat there and cried, and she says, "I cannot believe how much like Conway you sound." She said, "You're not even trying, are you?" I said, "No, ma'am." She said, "You're going to catch grief over that." I said, "I already do." She laughed. She said, "Well, don't pay them any attention." She said, "Because the world needs that." And so I left, and they said they'd call me in a few weeks. I didn't think anything would come of it. And I said a prayer. I said, "Whatever you want to happen, God's okay with me." And I walked in my apartment 20 minutes later, and the phone rung, and it was Joe Galante from RCA. He said, "We would like to offer you a recording contract with RCA Records." And I sat down on the floor and cried like a baby. Because
wow.
My whole life I tried to make that happen.
That's amazing.
And did it. every wrong way you can imagine. And, or I won't say wrong way, I'll say every not good way you can make a, you can imagine, you know. And when I gave it to God and said, okay, I don't need this anymore, I just need you, change me, and I'm willing to do the work, then I get a record deal. And it hadn't changed. I've held on to that just exactly that way for the past 20, 25, 26 years.
Well,
career,
you know,
goes up, down, that kind of thing, you know, but it's still the same.
Yeah.
Whatever God wants me to do.
Well, I'm looking at your resume of hits, and, you know, your very first song was the love song, right? I mean, one of the first big hit for you. It was a top 10 hit. And I actually, it charted on the Billboard chart, top 100. Which is such a rare thing to see, right? I mean, it's kind of a crossover, right?
It went number 7 on Billboard. I mean, I've had, I think, 7 in the Billboard Top 100, and you know, my first number 1 was actually a Christian song. But the love song, it started everything. I was out touring with Brooks and Dunn on the Red Dirt Road Tour with them, Brad Paisley, and Rascal Flatts, and it was insane.
Golly, I bet it was.
It was, dude. I mean, I was sitting there, I'm thinking, I got one song. I remember telling Kenny Beard, who had everything to do with me getting started, as well as Rusty Gaston, and says, I said, this guy's coming out here singing all these hit songs. I got one song that's coming up the charts. It's not even a hit yet. What am I going to do for my show? He said, sing the rest of your album. I said, nobody knows it. He said, nobody's going to be here. I said, what do you mean? He said, you are literally going to be singing while people come to take their seats.
Yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah.
And guess what? We started noticing very quickly a trend. People were getting in their seats early when it come to the time for the show because they were coming to see me.
Yeah.
And I would go out there after every show, and I still do this. I sign autographs. I meet everybody. I thank them, and I hug them, and take pictures with them because I think I owe them that. And I've never stopped doing that. But it turned into something, just to show you how it changed. By the time Long Slow Kisses was number 12 on the chart, I did a show with Brad Paisley. I think it's Virginia, West Virginia. It was like 133 people. It was an outside festival thing. It was like 133,000 people there. And they come got me and told me I needed to go sign autographs. I said, well, there's still people on the stage. I don't do that. No, you need to sign. They want you to sign autographs because people are raising Cain about it. So I went and started signing autographs. And KB come, he said, you're not going to believe this. He said, this autograph line is almost a half a mile long. I said, I know how long a half a mile is. He said, I am serious. He said, they got the gates blocked and they want you to shut it down because people can't get in and out.
Bonafide star, and you've arrived when you see something like that, huh?
Yeah, did the charts always reflect that? No, but the people did, and that's what I think. What I've learned over the years is charts can say what they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we all watch them. I still do. But how your fans treat you is a whole nother deal. That tells a different story. And when they come in and they make lines that long and they stay to see you, That says a whole lot for how much your music is impacting people. I believe.
Certainly so. I know you got such a great story. This is awesome to hear, and a great background in music. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. We're looking forward to this concert. Give us a quick snippet of what we're going to get. I mean, with you and Ronnie and of course Paulette, it's going to be something to behold.
Well, the first thing that's going to happen is we're going to open the show with the national anthem, and we'll all stand and support our country just for the length of that song. And then we're going, because it's America's 250th birthday, that's why it's called the Red, White, and Blue Tour. 250 years of our own brand of freedom, 250 years of our own brand of music, and this is the music. And so I'll open the show, and Paulette will come out, and Ronnie will come out, and then we'll all close it together. And it's nonstop. I mean, there's a lot of hit songs in there by us and everybody else that we're putting in there. And we've got some great musicians. And Ronnie is a storyteller, one of the best I ever heard in my life, and a history buff at that. So he not only sing you a song, he'll tell you the day it was released. Yeah, I've never seen him. And what a memory. Yeah. And they're still great entertainers, and I'm still learning from them.
Well, we're excited about it, Jeff. Thank you so much. It's nice to talk to you. We look forward to seeing you Saturday night.
I look forward to seeing you too, brother. Please let me know who you are, and so I can hug your neck and shake your hand.
All right.
We'll have some fun.
Will do. Jeff, thank you again. Jeff Bates with the Red, White, and Blue Tour, Saturday night at Mount Vernon Performing Arts Center.
Hey, baby, I guess you're wondering what I'm doing home so soon. No, I ain't sick. It's just this morning when you told me you didn't feel like you were the most important thing in my life anymore. Well, that broke my heart.